from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Welcome to show 116. And I'd like to wish you Merry Winter, Ryan, because winter has officially hit Montreal, Quebec, Canada. It's official now.
I know. It's so sad because last year, because of global warming or whatever, who would fucking know?
We like to call it climate change.
I like climate change. I like to blame global warming. So therefore, for there being no winter, literally until the end of January, I was walking around in a sweater mid-January in Canada. But this year, global warming is obviously a lie because it's...
Fuck you, Al Gore.
We're like barely a week into December and there's like 2 feet of snow outside. What the fuck?
This is the funny thing about Montreal. Because everywhere else in Canada, except for maybe Toronto, had been really covered with snow. Well, okay, not Vancouver because fuck them. But everywhere else had already been blanketed with snow a while ago, but for some weird reason, Montreal was spared. But the funny thing about any time Montreal is spared to, you know, like the winter blues, is that when it comes hard, all right? In 2 days, like more snow than I've seen in a while, it's just like, what happened? 3 days ago, not one fucking snowflake on the ground. And the next day, there is really almost up to your knees. That's just how it is around here, man. Winter comes fast, and it's just... And it just doesn't leave anymore. You count the days from how long it had been since you had seen the bare ground, and I'm like, this is when the long count begins, dude.
Well, in one way it seems okay, because at the very least it makes it less aggravating when you see Christmas decorations up.
It's true. Christmas decorations look terrible when there's no snow, don't they? They look naked, boring, and plain. Like, the light really works best with snow.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, now you can kind of figure out, why is it that we put up decorations and shit like that, and I think the basic answer is when times get hard, it's time to get festive.
But here's a question for you. How do those Christmas lights relate to the coming of our Savior, Jesus Christ?
Well, that's a good question. I would argue that it comes from the lights of the stars as they shone bright so that the three wise men could find this Jew boy in a manger and declare that he would be the king of mankind.
That sounds like you pulled it out of your ass.
Well, yes, I mostly pulled that out of my ass.
I wonder if Wikipedia tells us where Christmas lights are from.
I actually think it's from an ancient
Germanic
tradition.
You don't think anything.
Where they used to put lights on trees, if I'm not mistaken. Old Christmas trees used to have candles on them and shit like that. You don't remember that? When people would have crazy fires because they used to use candles for everything. Guess what happened before electricity? Fires, and lots of them.
Oh, yeah, here's the history. Early Christians were persecuted for having worship gatherings. A candle in the window signified where worship would occur for Christians in a community.
That's not what
there's no citation for it, so...
That's bullshit. That's not the origin of it.
I'm just telling you what Wikipedia says.
Well, Wikipedia's not always accurate. And well, I'm going to admit that maybe I'm full of shit of mine, too, but no more than Wikipedia at this point. Lighting a candle is a vigil, shit. B.S., B.S. People lights in winter for longer than Christianity's been around. Sorry.
Well, it says it's a long-standing tradition in many Christian cultures and has been adopted as a secular practice in a number of other non-Christian or predominantly non-Christian cultures like Japan. So Japan's taking it up.
Japan's taking up the whole lights thing?
Yeah, they love lights. I mean, it makes sense
to
me.
They love Christmas, man, but they love their own take on Christmas where Santa is like some weird, you know... present machine that wishes, that has well wishes and odd things like that.
Are you trying to signal to me that this show will be very low on factual pronunciations from you? Is this the thing? Is this the Jake Tells
really,
Lies show?
Really, we're not focusing so much on the whole Christmas thing, because I honestly don't give a shit.
Like,
a person would be like, oh, can you do some research on the origins of Christmas? Fuck off. No, I don't like Christmas. I've never liked Christmas. I will never really like Christmas. I tolerate Christmas. I tolerate the good things about Christmas, and everything else I try to avoid.
I actually hate the good things about Christmas, like the whole giving people presents thing.
No, that's not for me. That's not the good part. I hate that too, because it's like forceful present giving, and I'm not good when I'm forced to give a present. That's not when I do my best. I don't like being forced to something. It's like, oh, Christmas rolls around. Well, it better be thoughtful this year.
Well, lots of people look at it as an excuse rather than being forced. You know, it's kind of like the Tea Party saying, we're tax slaves. I'm like, well, actually, the roads and the schools and the hospitals say otherwise.
Yeah, well, you benefit from that tax slavery quite directly.
I'm just saying you've got a little bit of a negative Nancy attitude towards Christmas there, Grinch.
I have to probably say that it has something to do with the fact that I was poor. And you know, when you're poor and it's Christmas time, you ask some of the kind of basic questions that I'm sure every poor kid asks out there.
Which is why is Santa such a dick to me compared to the Johnsons?
Why do the Johnsons get all new shit and I don't? I know they're dicks. I know for a fact that they are pieces of shit, and yet consistently they get the presents they want. What do I get? Things I need wrapped in cheap wrapping. Socks, honestly? This is a Merry Christmas? I mean, the merriest Christmas that I had was only when I started being actually an adult. Christmas is fun now, but as a kid, I remember we were the poor kids that had to get the fucking Christmas basket, and then meanwhile, everybody's joking at your school about, oh, who's that poor loser getting the Christmas basket, and you don't say shit, right? You don't even laugh about it, because I'm like, I don't even want to lie.
Well, let me tell you what, as a rich kid, Christmas was awesome.
Christmas is really for the rich.
Absolutely.
I think that's why it's popular where there are rich.
Well, Christmas is a great time to remind poor people how crappy it is to be poor. when you're trying to figure out a way to pay the bills and afford,
the pressures of Christmas can't be easy on fucking poor, broke-ass parents. And I'm sure that there are fucking listeners right there that feel bad about that shit.
That's the key thing, because, you know, I hoo-ha about the fact that I have to figure out presents for my family. You know, for my very small family that exists, like, I've only got three other relatives on this continent. The rest of my family is, like, across the world, so we don't have to do the whole Christmas thing with all of them. So I got it pretty easy, but I can't imagine when you actually have to make Christmas magical for a kid on a fucking budget.
Well, there's a lot of pressure related to the holiday, man. And speaking of pressure, I just want to... We're going to keep talking about the war on Christmas, because it's basically a yearly tradition for us to talk about it. And, you know, it always gets mentioned everywhere on TV, particularly Fox News, that takes it upon itself to be the crusaders. While more important things are going on, but the key thing, I think, in any really polemic and propaganda machine is divert attention. And while lots of things in America are problematic, the one thing that everybody decides to focus on is the fact that there's a war going on to take the Christ out of Christmas.
To make Christmas more multicultural and accepting of people who aren't Christian. That's what I love about it, is the fact that...
At the end of the day.
Basically, they're saying, you're making this holiday more inclusive. Fuck you.
It's ours. You can't have it. And, of course, everybody's like, well, we're not taking it away.
And it wasn't yours to begin with.
And it was definitely not yours
And other people have other things going on that we might want to say, hey, we recognize the fact that you don't believe in Jesus, so how about we just include this very easily with a simple word change.
I like what you said before. Christmas is a hard fucking time for everybody, all right? I think just in terms of, you look at suicide rates, they skyrocket around this time, and it's not just because, you know, I guess some people are sad because they don't have anybody to love at Christmas, which, I mean, talk about it, it's like Valentine's Day, a reminder that you're a loser.
Well, there's the flip side, which is the reminder that you're in love.
Yeah, but you know what? When people got it good, they don't need no fucking holiday to celebrate it. Usually the holidays are felt most strongly by those who have nothing. You know, again, that's that whole why do poor people feel Christmas more than the others? Because you got nothing.
What was that? Remember that song back in the day? Do They Know It's Christmas? That song about the African kids? I would say that they don't give a fuck it's Christmas.
They just want to have some food.
They just want to have some food, yeah. You know, especially considering that at that point where their bellies are gigantic from, you know, parasites and gases from being so hungry.
And then, you know, there's the fact that flies cover their entire bodies, and you don't even have the energy to swat them away.
Why don't these kids just eat the flies?
God, so lazy.
They have a perfectly good source of food, and they don't choose to go to it. I say, whatever.
Okay, well, the whole show, by the way, is not going to be on the war on Christmas. This is just a very small portion. The actual show is about a movie we just watched called The... What?
I was just wondering if you remember the name.
It's called The Nature of Existence.
Ooh, you did your research.
Yes, I did my research, because here's the deal, actually. The guy who directed it is a filmmaker by the name of Roger Nygaard. I hope I didn't butcher it. But his publicist has been in contact with me, and they sent me a free copy of the DVD because I'm supposed to interview him probably this week, for at least for the next show, the next free show. I'm hoping to actually feature him as my guest. We're going to be talking about his movie because we watched it. So it's going to be almost a two-parter on it, because, you know, it's not just talking about the movie, but it's really talking about some of the things the movie, the questions that the movie asks. Some of the concepts and things like that. There's a lot to discuss, and I thought we'd have a show about it, and here's how it's going to roll out. The first thing, we're going to talk about the movie, and we're going to talk about our impressions of it. We're also going to talk about some of the guests or you know, all that rigmarole. Then what I want is for the bonus show is I want everybody who's a patron to offer their own kind of like... It's not a mailbag, per se. It's more sort of like another discussion that we're going to be having. So we're going to be reading what some people say. Try to keep it short. Please, we don't want
to... Well, we could summarize things. And how about this? It's basically, since the thing's on the nature of existence, we want to know what your thoughts on existence are. And rather than keep it to just the patrons, once again, as usual, even if you aren't a patron... Send us your thoughts anyways. If you send us your thought, participate in the show. Not only will we talk about it on the show, but we will give you the show, as usual, with these bonus things when people participate.
Yeah, that's right. And the new site is up. I'm sure some of you have noticed.
It's very red. Very red.
It's very red. By the time... The other show, the site was pretty red, too, man. I don't know if you remember.
No, not really.
It was red.
Well, it was, but not as red as this.
This one's more like candy red. That's why you think about it. It's kind of like a delicious candy red.
It is like a candy apple. Your new site is like a candy apple of atheism.
There you go. I have the candy apple. I'm the candy ass of fucking atheism. And what I'm starting to do is, before, remember how I said, oh, if you email me, then you'll have like a free show or whatever? Well, the cool thing that I'm going to be offering now is if you go to the site, and even if you don't want to pay for membership, there's something called the Silver Membership, which is just essentially subscribers. And subscribers are going to be able to get bonus stuff.
AKA people who sign up for the site and log in.
Right, exactly. So you're gonna get access to some member stuff. It's not going to be all the shows, but it's one of those ways that every once in a while when we have a show like this, subscribers will be able to get it for free. That's the cool new thing about the site upgrade, and lots of cool stuff that's slowly coming down the tubes. You got to remember, guys, it's taken me a little while to get everything working because I suck. And because the guy that I'm using to give me a hand lives literally 12 hours away from me, so it kind of actually makes things a little bit awkward. You know, I have to stay up till about 4 o'clock in the morning if I want to get any work done, and vice versa. So it's kind of makes it difficult. But we're trudging along.
We're getting there. Don't feel like it's not impressive. Anyways, enough rigmarole about the website and stuff. Let's get on to the nature of existence.
Now, I want to just get your thoughts on the movie as a whole, remembering, of course, that we're trying to entice this person to come on the show. I'm just joking. You can be as honest as you want, really.
You know, it was good. The guy who did it, he did Trekkies, right?
That he did Trekkies.
About, I really like Trekkies. Did he do Trekkies too, or was he like, was he thrown off of it?
Now you're asking me a question. I don't know. I didn't even know there was a Trekkies 2,
buddy. There is a Trekkies 2. Huh. But anyways, yeah, he did Trekkies, which I liked. I really enjoyed Trekkies.
I was actually surprised. You know, when he first contacted me, truth be told, is I get emails from people all the time saying, like, check out my new book. And then you read it, and it is nothing but insane drivel. And meanwhile, they want to try to get promoted and stuff like that. So at first, not that I thought it was like that, but I had my suspicions because it's mostly who I get, you know, mostly who comes in contact with us.
We're still small fry, so it's like other people contact us and stuff like that, and you never know, you know.
We always assume that they're nobodies because that's who we are.
Exactly.
But no, actually, when I found out that he had done Trekkies, which is a documentary I always recommend to anybody who follows Star Trek. If you've never actually seen the movie, I recommend it. I know that there are some Trekkies who look at it kind of like,
then they are sourpusses. They are sourpusses.
I think that if you watch Trekkies and you're like, oh, I didn't like the way that we were portrayed, then I'm like, it seemed pretty honest to me, okay? Maybe that's what you have a problem with, a bit of the honesty. Look inside thyself. But Trekkies, fantastic movie if you love Star Trek, and just looking at the world of nerddom. Which, you know, we're partial to. We're fucking nerds. We'll never deny this.
I'm a pretty big Trekkie.
Yeah, I'm a pretty large Trekkie.
I have a Starfleet uniform in my closet. It is too small for me now.
Well, that was for comedic purposes, to be fair. That was under your DJ name? What was that DJ name?
That was when I DJ under DJ Jean-Luc Picard.
Right. Yeah. And I had to shave his head, just like Jean-Luc Picard, at least in the early episodes before he went full cue ball.
You know, that haircut cost me sex that night.
Did it really?
It really did.
How?
Because there was a chick there who, when she saw there was no, and
couldn't
you
have
know
worn
how
a hat
it,
or something.
Yeah.
Hmm. I really don't recommend
my
that.
My Trekkie fandom haircut cost me sex.
Whatever. Lots of things cost.
You know, actually,
sex.
I think that's a pretty standard, you know, across
across the board. You
across
think?
The board thing you that think? Many Trekkies would say. Yeah. Anyways, yes, I'm a big Trekkie fan. I enjoyed his documentary on Trekdom. The way it was kind of done was he just really took the camera, and he turned it on the Trekkies and had them say their piece and just bridged it all together into a cohesive thing. And similar to this Nature of Existence documentary. It wasn't held together very well by this overarching narrative. It was just, you know, here's a bunch of aspects. Here's a bunch of people talking about those aspects. Now let's move on to another aspect. And it was the exact same thing with the Nature of Existence. And I enjoyed it, and it was good. You know, I would hesitate to even call it an atheist film, even though you definitely get the feeling.
You get the vibe.
You get the vibe that he's an atheist. And he involves a couple of atheist people to kind of give their counter argument, but it's very much about discussing spirituality and showing what all of these different beliefs think about existence.
Well, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head there is in terms of trying to describe how the hell do you do a movie when the thing that you ask, the question that you ask is what is the nature of existence? I think that what happened is that the filmmaker decided that he was going to interject himself into it because it's at least the motivation to try to find these things out is personal. But the problem with, for me, is interjecting yourself is that unless there's a kind of resolution or unless there's a kind of journey that the person is engaged in, it always feels a little bit disconnected. Now, with that said, I think it's less important than how the movie comes across. See, the original point of trying to make it a narrative about him, the best parts of the movie are when he's not involved, and it's not to say anything about him personally. It's just that the people that he interviews are often incredibly fascinating, and you're always wondering, when can I see that bearded it thing that's neither man nor woman that says the most outrageously hilarious things I've ever heard in my life?
Yeah, there's like, I think it's a post, I don't know exactly.
Tranny, I don't know. I think he's just pure hermaphrodite, really. I don't
but
even
anyway,
know.
Yeah, there is a hermaphrodite or something. I don't want to be insensitive or anything. It's just we literally don't know what the deal is.
At this point, we don't know.
He was a spiritual guide, and he was the funniest spiritual guide ever because he's about 300 pounds, gigantic breasts, looks completely like a woman except he has except he has got a gigantic bushy beard.
I thought he was a bearded lady.
And every. They went inside his little spiritual session, which was like him on a stage in front of an audience, and the audience was asking questions, and all of his answers had the word fuck in it. And I was like, wow, it's like the hermaphrodite fat Jacob of spiritual advice.
Really? Putting me there? That's not nice. That's not nice.
I'm just, you know, the fact that this was the only other person talking about existence that was swearing just made me think.
It's true.
This is where swearing puts you, man. It puts you in this box with Shahi. Not that there's anything wrong with that, again.
You know, you're going to offend a few of our transgendered listeners there, buddy. That are out there.
It's just different, and it's interesting.
It is really different and interesting. I actually kind of liked that guy because even his answers. My problem usually with gurus is that they sit there and they tell you things that sound real good, but they don't actually have any real substance to them. You know, they're just like, love everyone as yourself. And you know that's not possible. You can't do that.
Generalities don't really work too well in day-to-day situations.
No, they don't. I mean, is the first rule of becoming spiritual being that you have to ignore objective reality? Ignore the fact that there's some people around you that are dicks and that they don't deserve your love and affection. They don't deserve the opposite of it. They don't necessarily deserve your hatred and derision. But does it mean that you have to love everybody? I'll tell you what, no. No, I don't. I don't. This is not a responsibility that I'm about to fucking take. I will love the people that I care about as much as possible, and I will extend kindness to those, you know, to people out there. But for fuck's sakes, don't force me to love absolutely everybody. I will not love my enemy. Luckily, he doesn't exist yet. I have no enemies. I don't know how long I can keep saying that for, but as of right now, as of December 7th, 2010, I have no enemies.
You've never had enemies? Not even in high school? You had no arch nemesis?
Did I have an arch nemesis in high school? No. I can't remember. I only remember having an enemy when I was in elementary school, when a bully called Clay, who had probably failed 3 years, he was just massive. He was basically the size of an adult, used to grab kids by their ankles and flip them upside down. He was like Nelson from The Simpsons. He was probably my only other nemesis. And then eventually I think that they send him over to some kind of like mega retard school. I don't think he could pass a grade to save his life. He was going to be a perpetual adult in the school system, and they just pulled a plug on poor old Clay. Hmm. But that's as far as my enemies / nemesis have gone, unless I'm not aware of them. You know, there's probably people who would hate my guts. Maybe they listen to everything I say. Same kind of way that, you know, people hate Howard Stern. They listen to everything he fucking says. Mm. Maybe there's some people out there that are my enemies. Please let me know, because as far as I know, you know, I've got nothing but friends and acquaintances.
Well, the good thing about atheism is you can shit on religion, and generally everybody will agree with you. So, you know, as far as our listenership goes, they're going to be pretty much on our side.
Yeah, but you always find that one person who's just, you know, they've become contrarian to the thing that you stand for, and you there's nothing you can do to please them, right? They could sort of say, oh, an episode this, you made this mistake, and I hate your guts. And really, what else are you supposed to say other than that? I don't know what'll please you, buddy. But otherwise, like I said, no serious enemies. Let's go back to talking about the movie Nature of Existence. So, first off, I guess the beginning of the movie is him explaining, Rogers explaining how, you know, he didn't really think about the nature of existence or God or that kind of stuff. He doesn't seem to me at least particularly religious, but mentions that when he was a young boy, his father died of multiple sclerosis, and then after 9/11, he had one of those collective, what is the meaning of life thing that a lot of people had, which is why, you know, you had some people becoming much more politically active and others becoming politically less active. I'm thinking just Dennis Miller. And just remember when he used to be funny until he turned into a nut job?
What was 9/11? The
9/11 was it. He says that was it.
Man,
he's sort of like, he's open and upfront about the fact that the reason that you can't listen to Dennis Miller anymore is because of 9/11.
Did I mention on the show that I relived 9/11 like about 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago?
What do you mean by relived it?
There's a documentary out there called 102 Minutes That Changed America. I recommend anybody who wants to get really depressed to download it, because it's basically, it's a whole bunch of high-definition footage filmed in New York on that day that shows everything in real time over that 102 minutes. Like straight from, you know, stuff just from far away filming it right down to like underneath and inside the building during the attacks.
Wow.
And I, you know, sat down on the couch. I sat down on the couch and I watched that, and it completely blew my mind. But one of the things that it made me think about is the impact, because, you know, obviously when people start jumping out the windows and the buildings start falling down, like literally, like you have tears streaming down your face because you're like, oh my God, these are people losing their lives. But then you start to think, this is one building that these guys have knocked down. Meanwhile, over in the Middle East, how many buildings have we blown up and destroyed and gutted?
Well, I mean,
of these other people. I just want to point out for just one second that
that stuff that's going on over there that we don't even think about is changing these people's minds about us and about life in general. We don't even see it happening, despite the fact that we understand completely because we had it happen on 9/11 once.
Yeah.
Once.
They have a 9/11 every day in certain places. Just every fucking day.
Yep. Out in the fucking bazaar. Boom. 180 people dead from one bomb.
You're right. I think it's important to keep that in mind. I don't want to devolve this into a 9/11 discussion, but generally, death and destruction, or at least for, I think what was shocking for most Americans was probably the fact that this is not something that they're typically exposed to. Even though in many parts of the rest of the world, this is the kind of thing that happens all the time. I mean, you spoke about 9/11 having real time footage. Imagine if we had real time footage of the bombing of Dresden, or real time footage of all kinds of, you know, the sacking of Troy, of all the kind of disasters or massacres that have ever existed in the history of mankind. Only a small fragment of that have we had high-def cameras. Kind of makes you think. But I guess
and the stuff that we do, like Vietnam, we generally don't want to watch that.
No, it's depressing. Lock
it away. Don't even really put anything on the History Channel.
But yeah, so filmmaker has an existential crisis, so he decides that he's going to interview and talk to as many people as he possibly can. And you know what? The thing that impressed me the most about the movie is really the breadth of people that he talks to. I almost feel like, you know, after watching the movie, I'm kind of really interested to seeing what the bonus material actually is, because hopefully those will be all the interviews that we didn't get to see, because there were lots of fascinating people, including a guy who had recently died. You may remember him as the director of The Empire Strikes Back, Irvin, what's his name?
Irvin Kershner.
Kershner, who has some things to say as well. And I'm like, actually, that makes your movie even slightly higher up on my radar now, because who doesn't want to hear the words of someone who just recently died?
The guy who made the only good Star Wars.
Yeah, the one that is consistently watchable. The one that if you actually had to show a friend the first time what Star Wars is, he'd choose Empire. You wouldn't choose
If you can get away with it.
Yeah, you can't choose A New Hope.
But there's a whole bunch of other interesting people in there. They had Michael Shermer on there. They had Richard Dawkins, who was enjoyably ornery and in his standard way.
Hmm? Yeah. Being his good old self.
Yeah. And then they had Carl Sagan's wife, who I think was my favorite. Not only did she have the most impressive collection of atheistic, like, what would you say those are? Like all the shit that she had on her walls. Like, she had memorabilia. She had a page from
the manuscript that eventually made The Origin of Species.
Yeah, and she had one of Einstein's relativity papers. Like, literally, when he was working, he was working it out in notes, she got one of those note pages, like, framed up on her walls.
And plus, I also love the fact that when she's saying all the things that she's enjoyed in life, marijuana makes one of them makes an appearance. Which is like that whole part of Carl Sagan's, I don't want to say mythology, but I mean, you get a feeling to most scientists, at least scientists that are fairly young. Like, let's take Brian Cox as a perfect example. If you don't know who he is, he's like a British rock star turned physicist who made a program called Wonders of the Solar System. He's making another program called Wonders of the Universe that's supposed to be released pretty soon, and his series is awesome. Okay, it is by far probably one of the best miniseries on science. And obviously, he is a Carl Sagan nuthugger. He just talks about the whole reason he wanted to be a physicist, Carl Sagan, that kind of shit. But I love that unspoken part about Carl Sagan was a gigantic pothead. I think you watch Cosmos, and you get it. Now you get it when you're just like, oh, was Carly Boy smoking a lot of fucking pot when he made this? You can bet by just asking his wife, who seems to also quite love it. And have a weird, she has weird eyebrow tics, though. You notice?
No, I didn't notice that.
Could be all the pot.
So, do you want to move on from the review, which we will say is generally interesting?
We'll say first of all, talking about the
nature of existence.
Yeah.
I didn't really feel that the movie really offered too many interesting interesting insights, other than the fact that everybody, here's the problem with the question of the nature of existence, and this gets into my opinion on what
the point of our existence is that there really is no point. And that's the problem. And if you want to boil it down and say, the general answer most people say, well, the point is to procreate. That's the point of life. Life moving forward, the only reason that life continues to exist is because it procreates. And we think that because of that, the meaning of existence is to procreate. But the truth of the matter is that there is no meaning. There's no reason to do anything, and therefore that gives us an amazing amount of freedom to do whatever the fuck we want.
I think the better word rather than procreate is proliferate. Okay? That's the word that I would tend to use, because to procreate for me seems to involve a kind of very limited perspective of how life tends to multiply itself, right? Most life doesn't generally engage in sex. Say the majority of life, which is bacteria, just clones itself. It just continues forward. It's easier to make clones of yourself because, you know, just through the process of time and the ravages of it, you deteriorate. You have to renew yourself. Life must proliferate. It must essentially, all life is based on sort of like a very simple concept of harnessing energy to fight entropy. That's it. Okay. That's what I would say, because in general, entropy is kind of it's a process that is limited to time. As in, if you were to measure time on a microscopic scale, which is very hard to do, by the way, because it all breaks down there, but if you were to just try to describe what time is, one of the good ways to describe it is just how entropy increases. And entropy is basically how things become more disorderly, right? And the way that you avoid disordered system is when you have energy that comes from an outside source that tends to lead to order. That's our sun. That's the reason why the sun is the source of all fucking life on this planet. It's just essentially that without it, everything would move towards a maximum amount of entropy and nothing happens in a state of complete chaos. There is no proliferation. There's no more transference of energy. It is over. And that's when life dies. So what is life? Life fights the ravages of chaos. It fights entropy. So I would say that, yeah, if you want to boil it down to sort of like, what is the purpose of life? Well, in order for life to exist, it must do this one thing. And perhaps that one thing is a justification for its own existence.
Yeah, but that, once again, makes the assumption that the continuance of life is somehow the point of life.
Well, no, I'm not making that assumption. I'm not making that assumption. I'm saying that proliferation is a necessary quality of life. But like all things, if you describe something in terms of its purpose as its quality, then it doesn't make any sense. You know, sort of like this is an inherent nature of life, that it has to proliferate in order to exist from the get-go. So what I suggest, and I had the same thing, and by the way, I'm sure most of you fans who've been listening for a while will love this. I got a fourth visit from some Jehovah Witnesses the other day. Yes, they came by, and I had to naturally tell them that I'm moving and that they won't be able to
maybe
come by.
Maybe you can get some Jehovah's down in the Dominican Republic. I'm sure they would be very different.
Yes, that's right. I'm moving there for about 3 months. In January, but after that I'm on the road. I'm going to be traveling around, and that means when I'm on the road and traveling around, I'm actually going to be taking a much more active part in connecting with fans and that kind of stuff. This is another reason, guys, follow the site, because I'm going to be roving around. I'm going to be hooking up with fans. I'm going to be filming stuff. I'm going to be doing all kinds of really interesting things. I'm getting out of my little cubby hole, and I'm going to go experience the world. This is what I'm going to do. And hopefully you guys are going to be there to enjoy it with me. But nevertheless, Jehovah Witnesses came to my house, and I think once in a while they kind of make it a courtesy call, because they never stay long enough in order for us to have a new debate. But they do
well,
come
no,
by.
Well,
mo- no,
most of
materials.
The other three times were all at least an hour long, and this one was only half an hour, maybe 20 minutes. Actually.
Maybe 20 minutes, yeah. And the thing about whenever I have conversations with the Jehovah Witnesses, they're always asking me that question of, well, why is there life, and what is the purpose to life? The thing to me is that if somebody would have asked me the same question that this filmmaker asked, I would have had a really short answer. And I said, I actually think that asking something like, what is the purpose of existence, which is not the title of this movie, but nevertheless this is one of the questions that he asks, is kind of like asking, what is the smell of the color red? You can ask all kinds of nonsensical questions. It doesn't seem like a nonsensical question because we care about the answer, But trust me when I say that it is really inconsequential either way. You might come up with an explanation that seems satisfactory to you, but I assure you that it has no bearing on anything else that happens. Whether you have a purpose or you don't have a purpose, that doesn't fucking change jack shit. Except, of course, how secure and safe you feel about being alive.
And confident.
Yeah, and confident. You know, I thought the best parts of the documentary, which was, if I would have made it, I would have probably focused entirely on this, was when they were talking about the origin of religion, and a few people were saying, well, it just obviously comes from our fear of death, our anxiety about dying. And naturally, there's a kind of process that happens. There's a video that I put up about this particular thing. You can go to the site, and I'll include it in the notes. And it's just talking about this process that we have of trying to define meaning to our lives. Once we reach a certain age where we come to the real realization that we are just finite beings, then we're going to die. You're smart enough that every fucking human being can grasp this core fundamental concept. You are fucking going to expire, and that's all there is to it. And this causes a lot of anxiety. And if you really want to understand the nature of all religions, you understand that anxiety first and foremost. The fact that you are a finite entity and that you will die. I mean, forget about everything else. I mean, all the really interesting parts, suffering or love or shit like that, forget about that noise. For 5 seconds, focus in on the fact that there is nothing as mystifyingly terrifying as the prospect of facing your untimely death. I mean, does that... there's plenty of people out there. Remember when I did that the speech in North Carolina? I asked how many people in the audience had had panic attacks when they started like becoming, you know, in their middle ages, when they just finally started entering it. There are lots of hands up in the air, because I think that just when you realize that you're no longer on that upward trajectory of when you're a young person and the world is your fucking oyster, to when all of a sudden your DNA starts to deteriorate, those old telomeres start to kind of like expire and get less and less healthy until they're all gone and your DNA just basically crumbles apart. Yeah, when you realize that, you're just like, shit, I don't like it. I'm afraid.
Indeed.
And that fear is a huge part of it. And one of the parts that I think was also quite hilarious was this one religious guy, I forget who he was, he was Indian, and he's like, it's not about fear, but belief will make you fearless. All right. It's not about fear, but it's all about fear. Or fearlessness.
Yeah, religion will help you conquer that fear, but it's not about that fear.
No, not at all. But it'll help you conquer it if you're somewhat interested in conquering your ultimate fear of death. I mean, I really wish that to some degree we could all be more honest about that fear. I actually think that to a large degree the questions of religion, or just religion in general, could be put to the side as soon as we admit the fact that it's a terrifying prospect to die. But I think at the same time, we can just accept that, you know, even in our insignificance, that there will be no huge consequence to that death. The world will not end because you die.
You won't mind.
You won't mind. You're gonna mind as much as you minded waiting around to be born. You remember that time? Yeah. I don't either. So you gotta kind of like a look forward to the fact that you're just not gonna give a shit about any of the things that you really think are important. And maybe you remember when you said sort of like when you don't ask yourself that ridiculous question of what is the purpose to existence. I think what you have is an opportunity to really find, at least for yourself, a kind of purpose. It doesn't have to be an ultimate purpose. I think that those are ludicrous. I think they're actually a bad idea, right? If you think your purpose on Earth is to do one thing, it can probably be pretty hard to convince you otherwise that maybe you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, it's kind of like that guy in that, what was that movie about the religious fundamentalist guy who thought his mission from God was to
audience of one.
A Christian Star Wars trilogy?
Yeah, Audience of One, that's the name of the movie.
Yeah, very unfortunate that.
Well, I mean, there's lots of other figures that are kind of unfortunate. We probably would have wished that guys like Mao Zedong and Stalin and Hitler decided to do something else. You know, Stalin, Hitler, why don't you just stay as artists? The world would have been different if Stalin would have kept drawing nudes and Hitler would have just made crappy fucking landscape paintings. Be a very fucking different world. So sometimes purpose is not always a good thing. You know what I really loved about the movie? Here's one person that I absolutely want to get on the show. All right, Her name was Chloe. She was a seventh grader that the director interviewed, and she was literally the most fascinating person in this entire documentary. She had some very strange fashion tastes.
I appreciated that, though, because it meant that she didn't give a fuck. She was obviously doing her own thing because, like, her ridiculous sweater-slash-hat combo thing was color-coordinated. So I was like, she's going for something different. She doesn't give a fuck what you think about it. I love that about youth.
Yeah.
I love that about them, that they're willing to do that kind of shit.
The courage to not give a crap what other people think. And I really hope that that's not lost. You know, the pressures of society don't crush that individualism away from
what
her.
What happens to everybody doesn't happen to her.
Yeah.
Whatever. There are still some individuals out there. Huh? Fighting the fight? Are we not fighting the fight? Are we not individuals not crushed yet by the weight of the world?
We're in our own little subgroup, and we are allowed to exist in that, but we still care. It's like, you're not going to go outside with, let's say, for example, that ridiculous neon green hat.
Is this a dare? I don't give a shit. Never dare like something like that. I go to the convenience store in my pajamas. I have no problem.
Very little shame, man.
I have no shame.
It's true, but that's only because we live in the kind of area where everybody does that, sadly enough.
I have a very strong constitution when it comes to not caring about what other people think. I don't think I could do this very thing if I didn't, at least to some degree, not give a rat's ass. But I want to get Chloe on the show. Seriously, though, I want her on the show. Because one of the things that she talked about, which I thought was a brilliant summary of the problem with heaven, because I've been reading a book called Heaven. It's just basically, I guess, an amalgam of all the different fantasies that people have had about the afterlife, because that's what they are, they're fantasies. And the one thing that she said about heaven, which just made so much goddamn sense, which is that in a world where only happiness exists, nothing matters. It's not an interesting world. And I was like, this is for me the simplest indictment of heaven, but probably the fairest. That any person that tells you, oh, in heaven you get to do what you want and there's never an unhappy day and that kind of stuff, I'm like, how long can you stay in that environment before you go insane? What does happiness mean when it's always there? That's the problem with it. It doesn't actually mean anything. We're kind of weird, and I guess this is probably product of our nature that makes us kind of masochists, is that we can't appreciate the good unless we get some of the bad. You know, and that's just because the bad's always around. There's always bad shit happening to you.
I blame it on our monkey brains, which strive forever to move forward to better things, and for that, they need to feel perpetually dissatisfied with everything.
Well, there's an interesting theory that basically says that the reason why you feel depressed is to kind of precipitate change. So if you feel kind of like depressed in your own life, probably the real reason for that is that there's something that's gnawing at you that you need to change. The only problem is that, of course, an instinct can develop to try to force that change, but it doesn't mean that it's going to be very efficient.
Or possible.
Or possible. Yeah, exactly. But nevertheless, it's a mechanism that requires you change something. So depression has a purpose. Despite the fact that I'm sure that people who listen out there who are not comforted by these very words, they're like, oh, it means something. That's great. It doesn't mean shit to me right now. Well, I'm sorry.
Sometimes it just means that chemically we're not getting enough of that certain happy chemical splurting into our brain.
Well, there's, you know, I can definitely understand that if like anything, you have a range of behavior rather than a set amount of, you know, say it's a positive or negative feeling that any one person can have. We're all individuals in the sense that we're all equal and none of us are, carriers of the human genome. Each one of us is an individual. If you were to pick a human genome, you'd have to pick at random. And I have to believe that there are some people that are going to feel a range of that emotion we call depression. And there are probably some people that are going to be on the strong end of that range. You know what I mean? Like the people that are constantly, oh shit, I got to fucking take my toe off the fucking trigger. There's going to be that range, just like there's those fuckers who just never seem to get depressed, no matter what happens. And you're like, how can you be so positive? It's probably the chemistry in their brains. Fuckers. Goddamn fuckers. But yeah, I want Chloe on the show. I thought that was probably the most insightful thing. And you know what? I think that there should be no real rules in terms of interview for who you ask to get on your show, as long as someone's interesting. age is not a prerequisite to wisdom. We watch plenty of old people in this documentary being plenty stupid. Chloe here seemed to have a much better understanding of the world than the vast majority of people that were interviewed.
I always enjoy listening to people like between the ages of, you know, well, anyone up to the age of like 16 talking about how stupid religion is, because it really puts it in perspective.
Yeah,
it's exactly. Usually quite enjoyable.
It's really a reductionist view of why religion is stupid. I mean, it's kind of like that old from the mouths of babes, you know, echoes truth. Once in a while, I mean, one of the funniest things is always watching people trying to answer the questions of children in regards to their own religions, and as they struggle to answer fucking fundamental problems that children identify, usually pretty easily. Once they reach a certain age, their ability to find rational or consistent views or inconsistent views troubling is just part of their human nature. You have to work that out of them.
Kids,
you know,
are,
I mean,
always looking for the loophole.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're little exploiters. As a parent, you should know this. They're trying to exploit you as we speak. If they're in the room and they're not listening, yeah, they're total exploiters. Shh. You know what? One of the things that I also liked about the movie was the pro wrestlers for Jesus. This was also, I guess, you could probably make a whole documentary about
I think there has been one made about these guys, or at the very least, I've watched shows before where they've been brought up and they're traveling ministry and everything. There's a whole bunch of controversy regarding a lot of the evangelical stuff when it comes to like pro wrestling for Jesus and other stuff, because people ask, you know, is it okay? But obviously, the evangelical attitude is that anything that brings anyone towards Jesus is good, no matter what.
Yeah, and you know what? Some could say that's. If a person was saying, oh, well, I have a problem with what pro wrestlers are doing, because pro wrestling to me is really nothing more than what I call a violence play. And what I mean by that is it's just everyone agrees that this is kind of play acting, but there's still the thing that's being highlighted is essentially the violence. So you get to watch a stylized fight, and we all love fights. I mean, what's our other job, Ryan? What's the other part of what we do?
Fights.
Yeah, we comment on the world of mixed martial arts. So fighting is something that we're quite familiar with, and it's a part of our lives. And you can understand, as a person who appreciates fighting, why people enjoy combat. It's I think there's no more fundamental an approach to what is animalistic about us than the good old fight. It's like, look at every other mammalian species. Oh, they'll fight. They'll fight for a variety of reasons. Usually it's mating rights. That's the thing you normally fight for. But it doesn't mean that we haven't kind of appropriated fighting into lots of different narratives. It's not just about reproduction. Although, truth be told, it probably boils down to it most of the time. You know what I mean?
Pretty much, I'd say about 90% of all the stupid shit we as humans do that doesn't involve stuffing our pie holes with nutritious things relates to putting our penises in vaginas or vagina-like things, so long as it tricks our brain.
Whatever you need to stick your dick in is usually the point of contention. What I thought was really clever about that segment of the movie, the pro wrestling one, what I loved, and I think you'll understand what I mean by that, is at one point where I guess the good guy is getting beaten down or something like that, all of a sudden the lights go out and the pro wrestler gets replaced by Jesus. Because the whole thing is, in this violence play, Jesus has taken all your sins, and now the person has to sort of like deal with the fact that as he beats his opponent, you know, he is beating up Jesus, I guess, which is the weird and I guess misogynistic part of Christianity. You just have to accept that there's something they love about a good beating. You know, you ever watch The Passion of the Christ, know what the fuck I'm talking about, all right? This made the most money of any Jesus movie, and it's a snuff film. It's a fucking, it's more than a snuff film. It's an hour and a half of torture set to a score. So I love really those guys. What part of the movie stands out to you as sort of as the most... what's one looking for? Like the part that sticks in your mind the most out of the entire movie. If I had to ask you, boil it down to 30 seconds. What would you say? I really couldn't tell you. I mean, it's because the whole point of the thing is that it's so disjointed. It jumps around so much. They have so many people with so many different points of view. It doesn't focus on Christianity. It talks a lot about what Asians. Well, it doesn't talk a lot about what Asians believe in, but it has a lot of Asians giving their opinions, Indians giving their opinions, real Indians. Well, I mean, sorry, wait, that's. Real Indians, and then the Native Americans as well.
The real ones.
Their ones. No, I was saying that Indians ascend to Indians in India.
Right. The fake Indians.
And then there's the Native Americans giving theirs. So it's across the whole thing. So it's I don't want to say disjointed again because that seems negative, but it's hard to hone in on one specific part because it jumps around so much.
I think that maybe the problem when you have a movie like that is that ultimately when you're asking a question that's so arbitrary and really doesn't have an answer, is that you're going to get all kinds of people that weigh in on it. And really, what are you supposed to say at the end of the day about whether or not they're right or wrong?
Well, this is the whole problem, is that, this is the clear distinction between all religions and atheism. And, you know, the scientific method is that they say, we know the answer, listen to us, and you won't have any problems. Well, science says, we're getting there, we have some, and they don't really help you because most of the answers are depressing, and they kind of feed into that there is no reason for anything feeling. But, you know, it's still pretty wonderful, I guess.
We're here, so let's make a big deal about it.
The wonders of physics. I'm like, sorry, Dawkins.
Well,
I can acknowledge the amazingness of the universe, but don't try and fucking make me think that it's just as amazing of a tale as if we actually had, you know, Muhammad riding up on a horse.
No, I think it's actually more amazing. See, that's the issue, because the whole amazingness of religion is always so regional and completely uninteresting. When you're talking about awesome feats of strength and power, how about entire galaxies blowing up in phenomenon called quasars? Galaxies blowing up. Just these insanely powerful, crazy things that happen. Trust me, when a galaxy blows up, it doesn't happen in 1 second. It's a slow process where the explosion of one star triggers a fucking chain reaction.
But this is what I mean, is that you can't wrap your head that much around that.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Muhammad flying a horse one's easier, therefore greater.
Well, I'm not saying it's greater. I'm just saying...
It's more relatable? Maybe that's the whole point. Religion is relatable because it's always based on one thing that you can relate to, a stupid monkey character. Huh? That's who you had to relate to, because you're a dumbass monkey who just needs to cling on to whatever other very close approximation of you
on
there.
Pretty much.
That's why, I mean, it's interesting enough that we can actually sympathize with cartoon characters so long as you can kind of think that they're conscious and like you. They don't have to look like you. They just have to behave like you, and that's good enough. That's why you can have animals talk like people, and you're just like, I feel for what they're saying. It's because you've now empathized with them, and you think that they're you. And that's the only way, apparently, that you want to see the universe, through the eyes of someone else that's exactly like you. I'm like, how about trying to expand your mind, buddy? How about looking a little bit further than that? How about just trying to extend your awareness of the universe beyond just your monkey needs?
Take a less human-centric view of the universe.
You know what I thought was actually the funny part that sticks in my mind? When they went over to Gandhi's tomb, and there's a bit of an epitaph written on his tomb that's supposedly his last words, which translates to, oh, God. I want to put it in context that he was murdered. So, yeah, probably those were his last words, but I don't think that they were meant in any kind of reverence way. They're probably like, oh, God! Just the same way that if a person took my last words, it'd probably be like, oh, shit. Or, oh, fuck. I'm like, how many people's last words is that? I don't think he should be written on any tombstone. And this is me talking. You know what we should do? I definitely think that we should do an episode on Buddhism, because the one thing that really pissed me off about the whole documentary is obviously they go to China and different places in India and they talk to Buddhists, and there's this part in I think it's a Japanese temple, although it could be Chinese or Indian, where they're basically walking around and there's like a whole ceremony around there, but there's beggars that are basically holding out their arms and with bowls and stuff like that, asking for change. And the whole concept behind Buddhism is obviously that you have to overcome suffering and you have to transcend it and so on and so forth. And suffering is caused by desire. So if you eliminate desire, you eliminate suffering.
And to all the monks who said this, I got to tell you one thing that was consistent about them. They looked very well fed. You know, they didn't look like they really had to suffer to the same degree that everybody outside begging for some fucking food were suffering. And this is the part of religion that always bugs me, where you have that, what's the name, Ravi Shankar. Mm-hmm. You have that Indian guru guy that everybody worships, and he's just like, oh, I don't know why everyone can't be happy, and happiness is this, and happiness is that. And I'm like, Ravi Shankar, you have people that worship you and give you food and drop fucking flowers on you, fresh flowers on you. You're probably pretty fucking happy with the way that things turned out for you. They're good. But for the majority of the world, which has to worry on a constant goddamn basis where their food and their shelter is going to come from, I don't think life is that sweet. I don't think life is just easily packaged and hallmarked like you have to offer. Just be like, oh, just be happy and treat each other right. No, you need other things to make life possible. You need food. You need shelter. You need medication. You need to do more than just survive. And that's what Ravi Shankar seems to do, far more than survive. But I don't really think that a guy who's treated as a deity has a clear fucking understanding of what life is like for everybody else. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, maybe not the most trustworthy person to tell you what existence is all about. A very, very particular individual who's been benefiting from being treated like a god. Did you not see how everyone was treating him? Like, literally, like a god. They were just like, let's worship this man. Let us bring him incense. He can cure my baby or whatever.
At least they're pretty straight up about worshiping people.
Yeah, they don't make any bones about it. Nope. They're like, no, he's our god. He's a personification of all of these other past gods that have ever existed, and we'll worship him. And he's so unconditionally loving that we can't help ourselves. You know, it's a thing that they often say in the movie. Everybody who's there is like, he's so unconditionally loving. What does that tell you, actually, interestingly enough, about what those people need? Rather than anything about Ravi Shankar himself. They need unconditional love. Why is that? Why do people seek unconditional love? I think it's probably out of fear that, you know, at some point you may find yourself alone, or that other people may not love you for who you are. If someone is unconditional, then that means that they accept you for who you are. Something that's very difficult to find in this world. People that can accept you for who you are, despite your flaws, despite some of the things that make you kind of shitty as a person. Finding that would probably seem pretty good, and you might think to yourself, wow, this man is a deity. But like I said, Ravi Shankar can afford unconditional love.
It's not like he has to, you know, unconditionally love you 24/7, hanging out with you all the time. You get like a meeting with him.
Yeah, you get 5 seconds with him, and then all of a sudden he moves on to the next person. So he gets the best of you. You at your, you know, most pleasant, and probably your most submissive. Which was another thing that kind of I got from, like, the ending of where every religious person told you that the sweetest fucking thing was what? Submission. Submit to God. Don't make any decisions with your life. It feels so good once you fucking submit.
Well, I can understand, because they're basically saying, look, you can either stress yourself out and worry about whether or not you're living the right kind of life and whether or not you're on the right path to, you know, make the most of your existence, or you can just accept a straight-up scripture that tells you exactly how to live and what you got to worry about as far as everything goes.
And it's
much easier to just take that fucking one path.
Oh, God. Is it much easier?
Well, you know, it probably, there's, I'm sure, a whole bunch of road bumps along the way, but the concept, the idea that gets a lot of people into it is the idea that, you know, it's going to be a lot easier if you have this roadmap.
Well, it's funny, too, because when you look at how the roadmap is formed, and I've said this a lot, that no religious person really believes in exactly the same thing as even a person of the same religion. There's a personal aspect to all religious belief, because you have to square it with whatever other, you know, personal thoughts or impressions or whatever that you have in your own mind. But the scary thing about religion is it normally tells you that what you think is what God thinks. Remember how I said that they did a survey on people? They asked them to take contrary positions to what they believed. And once in a while when you do that, people will actually believe the contrary opinion. It's almost like they really didn't know what it, you know, the opinion boiled down to, and when they were convinced with arguments because they had to defend it themselves, they started to believe it. Well, the crazy thing about people who did that is that they assumed at all times that God believed exactly what they did, despite the fact that they believed in two entirely different principles at different times. But they're like, no, God was always on my side. It just goes to show you that you're really making all this shit up. You've already made your mind about what is moral and what is not, and now you've decided that this invisible man in the sky agrees 100% with what you think and believe. And this is always my problem with religious people. I'm like, that, A, is a scary proposition. Because how am I supposed to believe that you're going to take any kind of moral compass, you know, moral, how are you going to exercise moral judgment if you feel to some degree that you've already figured everything out? Or that you have a direct line to someone who's going to tell you what to do?
Whatever idea that you come up with is most likely what God actually believes. Well, rather than having some fucking doubt and humility about the goddamn situation.
Yeah, honestly, some fucking humility and doubt would be very much appreciated. They had Orson Scott Card. Thank you, Jesus. Who was on it. Now, if you don't know him, he's a science fiction writer. He wrote the, what were they called?
Ender's Game. There's two Ender's books that you need to read. The rest you need to stay away from. The first two Ender's books are good.
Yeah, and he's a Mormon. And the interesting thing about Mormons, I've said this on a lot of shows, is that they're one of the few religions that really accepts the fact that if you hear voices, that is really God talking to you. This is a personal revelation. In most other religions, they feel to some degree that if you're hearing this, something horrible is happening.
Get help.
And you know, the crazy thing about Mormonism, and this is always why, you know, every once in a while you'll hear about fundamentalists who just kill some of their relatives or other people. This is known as, I believe it's called bloodletting? Where there are a few fundamentalist Mormons who don't believe that, say, the sacrifice of Jesus is enough, and sometimes you have to sacrifice the blood of others or whatever. But the reason they feel that way and they're justified in everything they do is because they're like, I have a direct line to God, and he told me to do this. What is the problem here? Again, we're like, no, we've come to realize that that is a huge problem. When you have a voice in your head that tells you to do something, and you believe it, even in spite, really in spite of any evidence that sort of points to the contrary. And ultimately, you know, my whole thing from the movie, which I liked, was the fact that, you know, obviously it's like taking a journalistic approach where you're going to let everybody talk about what their impressions of it. But by the end of it, everyone who's already made up their mind is going to believe exactly the same thing. And the problem is just because, really, you have allowed anyone with any opinion, no matter where it comes from, to basically tell you where they think the whole purpose of the nature of existence is all about.
And unfortunately, that usually ends up boiling down to how they feel that you should be living, which, you know, ends up being just an attempt at a form of control over people.
Absolutely. And you know, there was one line, I think, from a professor. It was like a 20-second thing. And this professor said that how you feel about reality has no bearing on it. And you'll often notice that when people make pronunciations about reality, when they have very little understanding about it, is that they'll start with this, I feel, or this is how I feel. And we just have to get to a point of the conversation saying, well, I'm glad that you have feelings, but it has no bearing on reality. Who cares? Honestly, no one but you cares. If you have any answers that are backed up by evidence about what you think existence is all about, or how does it work, then present that. If what you have as a basis of understanding of that is just literally nonsense, make-believe shit, mythology, then I really don't think that you have any business saying anything without obviously being asked the question of, what evidence do you have to suggest that's true? You know, I think you should be asked both questions. What do you think is the nature of existence, and what proof do you have to back that up? And ultimately, that's the second part of the question was not asked. I think it should have been asked. I think that's probably the most important question.
I don't know. I think it would have been a waste of time because, as I said, I feel that there is no point to existence. So all answers are wrong as far as I'm concerned.
All right, but do you have any evidence to suggest why that might be true?
Just the fact that I'm right.
I was hoping you had something more insightful. But you know what? We're not going to end this discussion. We're going to continue it in the bonus show. So in the comments for this podcast, I invite you, come to the site. You'll get to check the new site anyway, so you should probably do it. But come to the site, drop in the comments. That's the stuff we're going to talk about on the bonus show, because we want to continue to talk about it. And then hopefully by next show, we can have Roger on the podcast, and he can talk to us about his experience making the movie and what he felt about it. And maybe I can entice him to do some kind of like really small contest.
Maybe we can entice his movie studio wherever to pay us for all the free promo he's getting off this shit. Damn. What? Three shows worth of stuff?
Ugh. A person may feel like it's too much, but you know what? The subject matter is rich anyways.
Yeah, I was getting sick and tired of talking about, you know, religious idiots in the news, you know? So
once in a while, we'd like to transcend that and say, oh, it's not all about them. Sometimes we like to just have conversations about the nature of existence. Kind of interesting. So, you know, if you have your... I know that you guys listening out there have your own thoughts about it. So please, share it with us. We're going to talk about it. If you guys have actually any sort of like opinions on your own and you want to ask us what we think about them too, at your own risk, because I'm not one to you pussyfoot. What I think that you have to say is stupid or wrong, I will say it. But well, you don't have to ask my opinion. That's the great thing.
Ask for mine. I'll be nicer.
Ryan will be nicer. You see, you hear that, everybody? Ryan's the nicer one of the show. I'm more of the vitriolic... hateful, spiteful, blah, blah, blah.
You're the stereotypical jerk-face atheist.
I know, I am, eh? When you really think about it, I am that stereotype. I'm like, they could take clips from my podcast, which I'm sure one day, if we ever make it big, somebody will. And they're like, listen to the hateful things that this atheist says. And you know what? I will tell you this. Anybody who's listening, you don't have to be as hardcore as me, okay? You don't. I'm one voice. I'm pretty much on that edge where I'm like, fuck you to everyone, and we need guys like me, but just there could be plenty of people right in the middle who's like, I enjoy listening to his podcast, but I wouldn't dare say half the shit that he says, and that is A-okay with me.
Well, I think it probably has something more than just the fact that they don't dare say what Jacob says. there are other ways of looking at it, but, you know, yeah, we agree that we don't all have to be like you.
Yes, I think that's an important lesson. I'm just trying to put it out there. I don't know why I feel the need to even say it, but I just said it. Hmm. And I think it's important to have the fact that I did acknowledge it. It almost makes me sound humble, doesn't it? Yeah?
Sure.
Okay. All right, well, before we go, I'd like to remind everybody that we do have a patron show. Now, the new system has changed just for everybody, just so everybody is aware. Now, when you originally signed up, you were given an account. And in this account, you're still able to sign in, and if your membership has not expired, you'll be able to get all the bonus shows. So this is how the whole thing operates now. You just have to log in order to be able to get your bonus shows. That's the only difference. And the bonus show feed, as it existed before, has ended. So this is no longer where you're going to get your bonus shows. So next week's bonus show, you will have to go to the site to get. That's that first warning. So I know a lot of you are probably like, can't you make this a thing on
less
iTunes
painful
feed and
things.
Less painful? Well, I'm working on that. Trust me when I'm saying I'm trying to figure that stuff out, but it's not as easy as it looks.
Initially, you will have to come to the site to get the new RSS feed, and that's the only time you have to come to the site. Other than that, you go on your merry way and never come back.
Exactly. So you have to get to that feed first.
Once.
The unpleasantness. And probably some of you will discover, oh no, I'm no longer a patron. But luckily you'll have the opportunity to give us more goddamn money so that we can keep doing what we do because we like it and we want to do it. And like I said, next week hopefully we'll have the director of the movie, Roger Nygaard, and he'll be on the show. He'll be talking to us about his movie and if you guys want to keep participating in the discussion, again, like I said, if you ask a question and you're not an actual bonus member, you can go to the site, sign up, and that's one of the ones that I'll offer for anybody who's a subscriber. So that's how I'm enticing you.
Definitely looking forward to hearing what other people have as opinions on the nature of existence as far as being an atheist is concerned. Because there weren't enough atheist voices in the documentary. There were a couple, but I do want to hear more from actual, you know, hardcore atheists who are into atheist podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. So we're counting on you fans to fucking make a great bonus show, and I know that you will deliver. All right, we'll catch everybody on Thursday. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I am Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.